The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number three of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin.
Hey-o.
Here at Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas, overlooking the world's largest sports book behind us. You see some clay court tennis going on. We have a drama at the French. Not only did the hamburger Yelena Ostapenko lose, but Elena Rybakina loses in a third set tiebreaker to Yulia Starodubtseva.
Wow.
So what a day for Iga. Iga wins in straight sets. Her kryptonite, Yelena, in her quarter goes out. And in her half of the bracket, Elena Rybakina goes out. So all of a sudden, things are turning Iga.
Is this
What an upset.
I mean, I think you'd
What an upset from Starodubtseva.
I think you'd answer yes anyways, but is this a time to get in on Iga in the futures? I mean, she's...
Time to get in was before the tournament, as I said, but yes.
I mean Sabalenka and Iga are still plus 260 each.
It's absolutely a thrust-ahead kind of day for her. So yes, is the answer
to your question. Coco to 7-1 if you're interested in that, too.
Now, we got a win on Nuno Borges as well, so we're 4-1 on the day in tennis, but five matches still pending. So... I don't know if I've ever been 4-1 and still been like, well, you still don't know how the day's going to go, but 4-1. Down a set in Bassivaretti. He lost the first set tiebreaker. Prismic and Fonseca still on serve in the first set. And Alice up a set on Humbert in the other men's match that I'm looking at here. Let's talk some baseball. Wishnev Wednesdays, ladies and gentlemen. The star is Todd Wishnev. He joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. From Pittsburgh, PA. You can follow him on Twitter at TWishnev. Of course, the author of the greatest college basketball season there ever was this past year, plus 189, 182. I don't even know what the number was. Todd can tell us. What was it, Toddy?
187.
Pardon me. 187. Hey, Todd, Will was on earlier, and I was mentioning, because the Dodgers are $4 favorites today against the Rockies, and I was mentioning that the Houston Astros in 2019 got to a minus 521 favorite in a game against the Angels. That's the highest recorded here in modern history. But you swear you bet something higher than that on a dog once? What was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was Royals-Yankees, first game of a doubleheader back in like 2018-ish or something like that. Severino was going for the Yankees, and Goodwin hit a three-run homer in the eighth. I think it was plus 425 I got. And I think they were like minus 550 or something like that. But
what do you remember? You remember if it was like a sideshow book or something?
No, I think it was probably, I was in Vegas at the time. I think it was at a regular book, but right. It was definitely a crazy number. Trust me. Yeah. It was the highest I ever won on a pregame.
Yeah.
It was definitely plus 425 or 415 at least.
All right. Well, highest recorded we have is minus 521, but Todd.
Take that, Will.
Yes, take that, Will. Take that, Will. There you go. Do you believe the record keepers or do you believe Todd Wishnev? That's what I like.
And Todd pushed back, but so politely, and he didn't have to yell. He didn't have to raise his voice.
That's right. Very well done. Todd, let's talk a little baseball, and let's begin with something that you've been looking at, which is teams' performances against certain types of pitchers. What do you mean by that?
Right. So, I told you I've been doing my little spreadsheet every day with who teams have faced starter-wise and how they, did with what the over-under was in strikeouts for each of those pitchers. And so today, this is a perfect example of what I've talked about it a couple of times. I've mentioned, alluded to it, but I've never really gotten specific with it. And this might be interesting for people. But a great example is today, Gavin Williams is going against the Nationals, okay? Then in strikeouts, I believe he's at 6.5 most places. Let me just tell you for sure. He is at 6.5 minus 110. Okay. So basically you say, well, 6.5, that's a big number. I mean, it's not really that big a number when you got a guy like Gavin Williams, who's a massive strikeout guy. He's, striking out, 30% of the guys are, close to it, somewhere in that range. So you want to look at the Nats. Just to give you a background on the Nats. The Nats early in the season were not striking out a lot at all. They were in the 20s, and still for the season, they're 23rd most versus all pitchers. Versus right-handed pitchers, they're 18th. I like to look at right-handed, left-handed on these as well, because that can be kind of important, depending on the lineup. So let's look at them as 18th versus right-handed starters. Okay, so now I want to go back and I want to look, okay, how have the Nats done versus big strikeout guys who are right-handers? Okay, because yeah, sure, they can get three strikeouts against Bassett or Young on the Orioles or some, you know, Holmes or, you know, you can just, there's tons of guys who are lined to 4.5 Keller, or, you know, all these guys that are like kind of, you know, they're striking out 6-7 guys per nine. They're not striking out 10-11 guys per nine, right? So who cares whether they can keep themselves to only three strikeouts against those guys? I want to know, how have they done against the big throwers? So I go back on my thing and I can scroll through and see who they face in every game. And so I found, like, for instance, back till around, you know, late April, they faced what I would call five big throwers. Mizio, we all know Mizio, right? He's mm-hmm. Mr. Strikeout. He got eight against them. Peralta, I would call, he's on the edge of what I would call a big strikeout guy, but I still call him a big strikeout guy. He got six against them. Henderson for the Brewers, he's a little known guy, but he gets a lot of strikeouts. He was a rookie last year. He's a guy who strikes out a lot of guys. He had eight against them. Bradley for the Twins, I would also call a pretty high strikeout guy. He got eight. And Burns, who's one of the top, also big strikeout guys for the Reds, won for me last night again. By the way, huge night last night. It was like 13-2. It was one of my best baseball days in a while.
Toddy with a casual, anyways, Burns got with seven. A casual 13-2 last night. Nicely done.
Well, I mean, I had been up like 30 units, then I was only up like 6 units, and now I'm back to about 27. But anyways, that's not the point. The point is that Burns also got seven. So you see here that the big strikeout guys are getting 7, 8, 8, 8, you know, against the Nats. So to me, that's kind of like, if I'm on the edge on something, that might push me over and say, okay, look, this is really what they are against. And it's interesting because you don't have like tons of sample size against these big throwers. You never do, because how many big throwers are there actually? But to me, looking at this kind of thing is kind of inside the numbers, because the numbers are only going to give you against everybody or against all right-handers. It's not going to really give you, oh, well, how are they doing against a specific type of right-hander?
So the bet then is, just to clarify with this,
I'm probably going to go over with Gavin Williams today, because okay, it looks to me like, you know, he's probably going to get him.
This is what Todd does in the lab, if you will, when doing baseball. You also track bullpens. Obviously, everybody serious about this does, but you have your own numbers on this. Give us an idea of the bullpens you trust, the bullpens you don't.
Okay, well, I'll just go through kind of, I mean, I can just come right off the top with some of the really bad ones. Like the Nationals have a really bad bullpen. How, you know, this is also another really interesting guy. I think your guy Basewinner talks about this about how there are two tiers. Yes. There are two tiers of bullpens. You know, like the Nationals have a terrible bullpen, but lately they've been bringing in Parker when they're winning. So like he's kind of their new guy for if they're winning, who can they trust? Right. And so they bring in Parker. He's actually not that bad. He was a starter last year and he's been kind of holding the fort there. So they're still bad, but they've been a little bit better at, you know, holding leads. And you want to keep in mind that kind of stuff. You know, I'll tell you right off the bat, one team that doesn't get enough hate, and that's the New York Yankees. The New York Yankees bullpen it's not good. You know, they bring in this guy Hedrick. You know, I was at the Camden Yards game a couple weeks ago when Kobe Mayo is up against Hedrick in a late inning situation. Yankees leading 2-0. It was a game Weathers had a no hitter, and I had the Yankees. And of course, Kobe Mayo, of all people, is like hitting 122. He hits like Stevie Fezzik hits backhanded tennis balls.
You know, oh, there it is.
And hits a three run homer off of Hedrick. And then they have Bednar and they have Bird. For a good team, the Yankees are not very good in the bullpen. Neither are the Tampa Bay Rays. That's another team that, you know, has some trouble in the back end there of the bullpen. I'm just kind of scrolling through here. Teams that you would, you know, the Phillies have a good bullpen. This led to a bet earlier in the week for me. It was I can't remember the exact score. It was under five. So yeah, it was a 2-1 game or a 3-0 game, something like that. And the Phillies are playing the Padres late innings. I took the under because I know the Phillies bullpen is excellent. The Padres bullpen is excellent. And, you know, it stayed under the number. I know I only have 2 minutes left. I would like to discuss one thing. We used to play tennis with serves. Okay. The reason we couldn't play tennis with serves, because you guys just weren't good enough. And you said, okay, we play some other game. Let's play 21. So we came up with this game that it would have no serves. Now the rules are you hit the ball 1, 2, 3. And then on the third ball, the guy gets to decide whether he wants to hit the ball and get the point going, or he can decline if the second ball was too good, or whichever one we say the second to last ball was too good. So either guy can say, no, I don't want to play the point started over again because you didn't hit a good enough ball on that third ball. And Stevie claims that I somehow wait for the perfect ball to beat him. No, Stevie, I can beat you with any ball. You stink, okay? So you can keep calling me a cheater. You can keep calling me a cheater on your Friday with Fezzix on tennis as much as you want, but it's not accurate, just like a lot of your takes are inaccurate. Now, let's get back to business.
It's a gentleman's game, apparently.
A left turn out of nowhere to settle a personal...
Because I forgot, and I wanted to get it in this time. I'm not going to let him keep besmirching me.
I will, if I can weigh in here on the rules. I think you guys need to change the rules. If you're depending on both players being gentlemen of when the point is going to start, I don't know if that's going to work out, Todd.
Todd Wishnev.
No, that's the point, Kelly. Either person can decide not to hit it. Each person has the same situation. And this coming from the angle shooter of all angle shooters.
Yeah, I kind of immediately side with Todd on this one.
Guest on guest violence. Thank you. Guest on guest violence here on A Numbers Game. Todd Wishnev, apropos of nothing, taking shots back at Stevie Fezzik.
Well, we were talking about bullpens, and it reminded me of being besmirched.
Makes no sense whatsoever. T Wishnev on Twitter. Wishnev Wednesday. Thank you, Toddy. Appreciate it. Reminded him of being besmirched. I guess this is why that happened. Coming back on A Numbers Game, back to the NBA. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game. Don't forget our Visa Pro discounted annual subscription. I don't know that we've had an offer this good. Certainly one of the best VSiN Pro offers of the year. It's your final week to get a full year of VSiN Pro, normally $240, for just $199. And when you sign up now, we'll give you 2 extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. With promo code PRO, you'll get daily best bets from VSiN hosted guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24-7 live video, plus full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year. This offer expires after May 31st, so don't wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code PRO. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Should I run Burgundy my way through some tweets?
Sure.
A-Rail talking about the Wishnev segment. He goes, shots fired.
That was fantastic.
How about Todd's like, I've got 90 seconds on a national radio show. Let me use it for my own personal beefs.
I'm pretty sure that happens multiple times a week on our show.
Brian M. So the next time Todd is in Vegas, the people need a remote ANG from the courts with Wishnev and Fezzik playing tennis in the background. So the problem is Fezzik doesn't play anymore because his knees hurt him. It isn't easy.
This is a good call, though. If I can recruit Ben Wilson, I will do play-by-play with Ben Wilson.
I used to bet Wishnev Wilson tennis matches was great. Manny Davison, FanDuel Arizona, the only spot I've seen Matheson blocks offered so far. Talking about the Hurricanes game tonight. Good friend Chillionaire, best role player fan favorite has to be Brian White Mamba Scalabrini, New Jersey Jets legend.
Scalabrini.
There's a vote for Scalabrini as well.
You know what? Who does excellent work on SiriusXM NBA radio?
Who dat?
Scalabrini.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He does a great show.
I don't think I've ever caught him doing it. Here's an update on the tennis again. 10 plays. Count them, 10. You like when people say that? When they're like 10 playing, they go, count them 10.
I liked your line earlier because I'm like, this would be like golf matchups in a single round for me where you're like, I'm 4-1 and it still could be a bad day. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm 4-1. So again, we had 10 plays. Those that have been completed, we are 4-1. 4-1 on the only loss being on the ladies' side was a Deanna Snigor match. Otherwise, we're 4-1. Nuno Borges was the, okay, yeah. So the ones that are pending, the only ones that haven't started yet, let's start there. The only ones that haven't started yet are the two matches there at the bottom of the screen. Jill Teichman plus 135 versus Magdalena Frech and Solana Sierra plus 154 versus Jasmine Paolini. Those have not started. Borges is a winner up at the top. Prismich Basavaretti and Alice have already started. Alice is up 2-0 on Hugo Humbert, so we're looking good there, although, you know, these are best of five, so anything can happen. Basavaretti, not so much. He lost the first set tiebreaker to Alex Mickelson, American counterpart, and so it didn't go well in the second set after he sort of crashed there. So he's down 2 sets, so that doesn't look good. Alice up 2 sets, Basavaretti down 2 sets. And the third one, which is the, where is that? Where do we stand? Oh, on serve, Prismich and Fonseca, first set still. So there you go. Teichman and Sierra still to come if you are wanting to join the tennis parade. 10 matches at the French Open. We'll have Zach Cohen on later in the week for his French Open plays as well. You can always check out Zach's picks at VSiN.com/picks as well. Not just me who has the picks there, but also Zach as well. We should point out from the VSiN stable, if
that's
you
right.
will. Are we stable? Yeah, I think we're stable.
Yeah.
But the big news again, Ostapenko out on the lady side and Rybakina out on the lady side.
It's wild, man.
Huge.
I'm surprised that those futures odds haven't adjusted.
Oh,
more.
That's a great question. And that was a great question from you because of the fact that it hasn't adjusted makes no sense. Those are, again, Ostapenko in her quarter, talking about Iga's quarter, Rybakina on her half of the bracket.
Well, you know who I think, the one I saw move, and I'm assuming same quarter as Rybakina was, let me pull that back up, is Andreeva, same quarter.
Andreeva's the same quarter, but I don't believe in Andreeva.
Yeah, see, she's down to 8-1, but she's really like the only number at DraftKings that's moved, right? Weren't Iga and Sabalenka both plus 260 before the tournament? 3-1 yesterday, Iga was. Okay, so came down a little bit.
I mean, Iga still has to deal with Svitolina, Kostyuk, and Bencic in her quarter, but you take out Ostapenko and you take out Rybakina, that helps.
Okay, here's the question. Who's on the Rybakina side? Like, who would she have played in a semifinal?
Rybakina would have played Iga in a semifinal.
Iga, okay, yeah. Yeah, so Iga, man. Iga.
Yeah, although, again, Iga's in the death quarter.
Except she's in the death
quarter. She's in a death quarter. They did her no favors. But that helps. Today helps for sure. Iga winning in straights once again. Easy peasy. You know what we didn't do earlier, Kelly Bidley? There's a couple of things. We got to do our country clubbing with the Charles Schwab Challenge. But before we do that, can we just look at these real check-in real quick on the NBA draft numbers real quick? Can we do that, guys? Just because I want to do it before country clubbing. First overall selection, this is on, this is still next month. I mean, the NBA draft is still, you know, quite a ways away. What is it? June 23rd? Do I have that correct? June 23rd on the NBA draft? Don't hold me to that. AJ DeBanza minus 450 to go number one to the Washington Wizards, or whoever ends up picking number one, I should say more accurately. The Wizards currently hold the number one pick, winning the lottery. DeBanza's minus 450, and I was in DC, and I think the buzz is that they will draft him, despite Utah's love for him at number two. And then the number two pick, this is where it gets a lot more interesting. The number two pick, which the Utah Jazz have, this is a little closer than it used to be. Darren Peterson is minus 145. I still think he's going number two, but that's getting a little tighter. DeBanza plus 350, Boozer 4-1, Caleb Wilson plus 650. I still believe it's DeBanza, Peterson, Boozer, Wilson, 1, 2, 3, 4. Memphis and Chicago.
I hope you're wrong and we fall in love more with Peterson here, but we'll see. Also saw this report from Brett Siegel the other day. He was doing his mock draft, writes for Clutch Points. He had a report that the Thunder, very much in the mix to package together draft picks to move up for Cameron Boozer.
Wow.
That's who they are targeting, apparently.
Oh, man. By the way, June 23rd is indeed the first round of the NBA draft. June 24th, the second round from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Now, let us go country clubbing, non-tennis. Let's go golfing, country clubbing. Oh, yeah. All right, low sticks. Love it. Kelly came by the glow sticks. What a great job by everybody, the crew here, the glow stick.
I only see two participating. I only see Danny. Danny and Darnell.
Darnell? What's the story,
can't
Darnell?
See, can't see the director. Yeah, I got thumbs up from Danny. It's Darnell.
Talk to us about the Charles Schwab Challenge, sir.
132 golfers, top 65 in ties. We are back at Colonial Country Club like we are every year for this event. I will say first off, if you've been betting golf the past couple weeks, if you're like me, thank God we're back at a golf course. We know what it's going to look like. Colonial, kind of the same every year, par 70, 72-89. This is one of the smaller combinations on the PGA Tour when it comes to fairway width and green size, very small greens, very small fairway. So you need to be accurate off the tee, and then you're going to have to hit it quality approach shots into some small greens. Not a tough, tough course when it comes to scrambling and around the green play, Gil, but because you got such small greens, it's going to come into play. So definitely something, if you're at home, I think you should be handicapping a bit more this week. As far as what I did stat-wise and added a little bit more to this week was I looked more at putting stats this week. Ron Close over at BetSports had this great note. 18 of the last 20 winners of this event ranked 17th or better in putting average during the season when they headed in here. So this is really, it does turn into a putting contest. We saw Wyndham Clark win last week with 12 strokes gained on the greens, which is crazy. Probably never going to see anything like that again. I am excited to bet this week, though, after heading into these last two tournaments with an unknown course a bit with the PGA, and then we talked all about those renovations last week that really never ended up showing up at all. This is a course that you at least know what you're getting and the odds board. You got Ludwig at the top at plus 970. Dude doesn't win. He's a great golfer. He's having a great season. He just doesn't win.
The rep has begun.
So, like, this is a good week. You can attack outrights. Russell Henley, 20-1. You know I love Russell Henley. I've bet him a ton. It's three straight tournaments for him where he's lost on approach, and that's what he does. So I think the top of this board is very beatable. You got Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler both at 23-1. Bobby Mack a little bit longer than that, 26-1 I'm looking at right now. Then it drops down into the 30s. I think there's a lot of good outright bets that you could make. I started my card with Justin Thomas. We talked about this during the Truist, before the PGA. He was seeing Cameron Young putt so well, and he has been all over the place with his putter, and he said, "Cameron Young, let me see your putter real quick." And he tried it out. He's like, "I love this thing. Get me one of those." Switched to Cameron Young's putter. He has been gaining massively these past two events with the putter. Now, Justin Thomas, that can come and go. We'll see if it sticks around. But again, with this field, I think he's live this week. Mid-20s, I think, is a good bet on JT. Did finish T4 at the PGA, 13th at the Truist. And then Ricky Fowler. We've been betting him all year, top 20s, top 10s. He's been great for placements. I think he's live this week, Gil. I think he could actually win this damn tournament 25-1. I did bet him. He is my second highest rated golfer this week because number three is one Alex Smalley, who I've been betting all year long. Love him this week. Outrights, top 20s on Smalley. Got a few others I'll hit on the other side.
Let's do it on the other side. Charles Schwab Challenge and more. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget about the sharp plays at sharpplays.com on match transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info, and alerts directly from the pros. Scan the QR code for more on your screen, sharpplays.com. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, just wrapping up the Charles Schwab Challenge. You had a couple more bets you wanted to share before we get to Nick?
Yeah, outright card for me this week is Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, JJ Spahn, who I did bet at the PGA. The putter has been complete crap for him here this season, but he has really gotten back to it with his ball striking. The off the tee and approach numbers have been real solid. He missed the cut at the PGA, but it was a T5 at the Truist, T14 at the Cadillac, and T25 at RBC Heritage in three signature events before that. He finished sixth here a year ago, which is notable. This is the fifth most predictive course on the PGA Tour. So I went with him, and then Alex Smalley. I think Alex Smalley, 30-1 or longer, is a great bet this week in the outright market. And then I went top 20s, Ricky Fowler, Smalley, Matt McCarty at plus 250. And then I know one name that's going to jump out to Gil Alexander.
Bazoot and Hoot.
Christian Bezuidenhout, who I'm pretty sure I have a lifetime, like, minus 29 units betting Christian Bezuidenhout, but I'm going to go back to it this week.
That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Wes was even trying to be nice on long shots when I brought him up. He's like, you know, you could bet like a top 40 or something. I'm like, no, I'm just going bigger, going home, plus 250 on Bezuidenhout, top 20. It's a good course for me. When you look for good approach players, good putters, he often spikes, and he did for me this week. I did bet a little Ludvig, but I went in the top Nordic market.
Wow.
Yeah, over at Caesars, minus 121. And then one tournament matchup for me, so far, Will Hill's guy, Tom Hoagie, over Mackenzie Hughes. I will be adding more of those at Visa.com today.
Top Nordic. I'm going to take a stab at this.
Why'd you have to do
this? Scandinavian countries, Sweden, Finland, and Norway. And then I think they throw in Denmark and Iceland in case there's an Icelandic.
I believe golfer. You are correct. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because it does include the Danes. Yep.
Nordic includes the Danes. Well done.
I was going to say, well done by you.
Visa Killer.
Piece that together.
Visa Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge, by the way. Thank you, sir. Stevie Fezzik lost yesterday. Only, by the way, so he's 21-14, not 21-13. He's 21-14, which means that only Kyle Akins, so I am, only Kyle Akins can beat me outright at this point. Kyle's got one more play in this round. Otherwise, I have clinched. Only Kyle stands between me and a clinch of at least a share of this. Kelly Bidley not
pictured. Yeah, you're right.
Kelly Bidley not pictured on the screen.
Nope, still not pictured. I have no chance of catching Nick Whalen either.
I was going to say, you know who's making a sneaky run for second place, though? Nick Whalen, who is, of course, the co-host of the show that follows us here on the network, Prop Points, which he does with Jeff Erickson every day. Nick Whalen joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Look at you, Nick. 19-15 coming up from the rear. Look at you. Well done.
Look, we ran into some adversity, Gil, at the end of the first round, some adversity in the second round. But yeah, we were on a nice run, at least before last night. I believe I had hit 8 in a row in the contest. Damn. And then was all over the under in Spurs Thunder. I thought, okay, we got, you know, two of the really three top scoring options at this point out for OKC. De'Aaron Fox is hobbled. How are we going to get points in this game? And like 3 minutes into the second quarter, that was completely down the drain. We saw really a pretty big reversal from all the struggles that we saw from OKC in game four. Isaiah Hartenstein was great. I would stop short of saying Chet Holmgren was great, but this was pretty easily his best game of the series last night. And it says a lot that 16-11 goes down as a huge success for Chet Holmgren. We're kind of in Jalen Duren mode with him right now, but obviously Jared McCain, Alex Caruso came through for OKC. So still in it, but I believe we only get, is it three picks during the NBA Finals? Yes. So it's getting late.
Yeah, it's getting late early, as Yogi Berra once said. But you still have a shot at second place there for the $500 prize. So what about Game 6 tomorrow night? Are we going to get a Game 7, I guess, is the first question. Spurs favored by 3.5. Do you have a play on the spread or the total of 218.5? And what prop bets do you have? Let's just start with, do the Spurs win this, in your opinion?
I think they do, and I am holding a Thunder in 6 ticket, so maybe there's a little bit of mental hedging going on, but this has been such a back-and-forth series. It's been kind of a back-and-forth playoffs even for the Spurs in some ways, where, you know, in each of these rounds, even going back to the Portland series, like, things have gotten a little bit dicey, and just when you're ready to start wondering, like, does this team maybe not have it, they usually answer back, and I would be pretty surprised if we see, you know, another quiet outing from Victor Wembanyama, who did get to 20 points last night, but that was largely because he got to the line 12 times and made all 12 of those free throws. I thought the Spurs played about as badly as they could as a team outside of Champagne, who kept them in it in the first quarter. I thought Castle was fine. Only 3 turnovers for him. That goes down as a win, but Fox didn't really look like himself. So I will take the Spurs with the 3.5 for game 6. And look, it's going to be super popular. It's going to be chalky. Wembanyama over 27.5 points. He is quietly averaging over this number for the series. You know, it's been pretty much feast or famine game to game, but I think we get a locked in, aggressive, backs against the wall version of Victor Wembanyama, kind of a take matters into my own hands situation for him tomorrow night. And then I will play the over 6.5 assist guys for Stephon Castle, who's gotten to at least 6 in every game in this series. He's averaging over 7.5 for the conference finals. And you do a little digging over on NBA.com/stats, 16.4 potential assists per game in this series for Castle. The advanced numbers would say if the Spurs were converting these at the rate that you would expect, he should be averaging just a shade under 10 assists per game for the series.
Who should the Knicks want to play, in your opinion, Nick?
Great question. I think it's still the Spurs. I think it's still the Spurs. You know, there's still the experience factor. I mean, the Wembanyama piece is just, you know, nobody has anybody that you feel good about throwing at Wembanyama defensively, but at least you have the two bigs. You know, you don't want to play Mitchell Robinson maybe more than 15 to 18 minutes because of what you lose offensively and what you lose in terms of playmaking with what Cat's given them. But you have the bodies, at least in theory, to throw at him. But really, I think both of these teams, OKC and San Antonio, the guards specifically, present some big time issues for the New York Knicks. Like, if you could draw up, you know, the two teams that could give Jalen Brunson trouble, the type of defenders that each team could throw at him, it's Dylan Harper, it's Stephon Castle, it's Alex Caruso, it's Cason Wallace, it's even SGA, who might spend some time on him in that series. And of course, the big wrinkle is, you know, what version of the Thunder would you be getting? If you're getting OKC without AJ Mitchell and without Jalen Williams,
right.
Maybe that is the more appealing matchup. But if you're assuming that at least one, if not both of those guys play in the NBA finals, I think you still want the Spurs if you're New York.
All right. Let's talk a little football. We have a few minutes here. We haven't really talked football with you. I know it's May, but I'm curious. You're a Jags guy. Give me the way too early. The Jags have nothing to do with this question. I just wanted to point out to people he's a big Jags fan. Things looking up for the franchise.
Well, I might be betting the Jags in the division this year.
Well, I mean, we could start with there. I was going to ask it more broadly. We could start with that, but I was going to ask it more broadly. What's the most, based on market, based on what you've anecdotally taken in, what's the most outlying Nick Whalen opinion right now that doesn't appear to be a consensus opinion in the NFL?
Look, this might be a little more fantasy than it is betting, but I think it is reflected in the betting markets as well. This team is 5-1, pretty distant fourth to win its division. But I'm back in on the Minnesota Vikings. I'm back in on Justin Jefferson. I'm back in on Jordan Mason, Jordan Addison, pretty much every piece of that offense. I am a Kyler Murray defender, and somebody's probably going to clip this and play it back in, you know, mid-October when the Vikings have like two wins and this looks really dumb. But I just don't think we realize, you know, how dire the quarterback situation was for pretty much the entirety of last season and what it did to the offense, what it did to just how they had to operate game to game. If you look at where Kyler Murray is going in drafts, you're getting a crazy discount. He's like the QB 21, QB 22 right now. Like, even 2 years ago when it felt like he wasn't playing well in Arizona, he was still a top 10 fantasy quarterback. I think Kyler Murray, whatever your opinion is of him, is going to be a massive, massive upgrade for Minnesota, which, you know, sneakily usurped the Lions for third place in that division by the end of the season. So I still think the Minnesota Vikings have a pretty high floor. I would not be surprised, you know, given the kind of fallback potential for the Bears, what's going on with the Green Bay Packers right now, Josh Jacobs situation, that's not great. I think Minnesota could be a lot more competitive than the numbers would imply.
A lot more competitive than the numbers imply just stops a little short of saying bet on them for the division, or are we doing that?
I think Detroit with the schedule, and I'm pretty in on this Lions team. I think they make the most sense, and you can still get Detroit at like plus 185 at DraftKings, which I don't think is bad. But 5-1 for Minnesota, for a team that, again, is extremely well coached, even when they had bad quarterback play, still had a pretty nice baseline. They have maybe the best defensive coordinator in football. If you're asking me, like, which fourth place team in the division by the odds would you bet to win the division, it would definitely be Minnesota.
Hey, which fourth place team in the division? No, I'm kidding. That would be it.
Five the Minnesota Vikings.
5-1 on the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, what about your Jags? You got them for the division in the AFC South?
I still think the Texans defense is going to be really transferable. You know, they made some improvements on the offensive line. Of course, the big question in Houston is CJ Stroud. I would pick Houston to win the division. I don't like how the schedule stacks up for the Jags. You know, after playing the Browns in week one, their next seven games are incredibly difficult. A lot of those are on the road. Two of them are in London. So they're going to have to find ways to win games that they're not going to be favored in early in the year. I don't necessarily like the attrition that they had defensively, specifically with Devin Lloyd, who turned into like a borderline all pro for them last year. I think we kind of meet in the middle as far as the first and second half of last season version of the Jaguars. Second best team in the division for me. I would still bet Houston.
All right. You can follow Nick on Twitter at Whalen. Just replace the L with the number one. We're still working on that. We're workshopping what it could change to.
Matt Brown's working on it.
Matt Brown is working on it. We look forward to prop points at the top of the hour. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Nick Whalen, everybody. Coming back, we'll recap the bets next.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game. Chris Heath on Twitter. God forbid Kelly ever finishes Country Club in its segment. And did he just call it a damn tournament? What's gotten into this guy?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm allowed to say that, but I did say a bad word on long shots last night.
Yeah, but that's a podcast.
You're so I think that's what my brain was thinking, Gil, but we get replayed on Visa now.
Oh.
So Wyatt had to go in there and do some editing. Yeah.
I hope somebody tells me that before the Megapod.
That could get ugly. Yeah, that would be a bad one.
Johnny Ringo, just when we thought we were going to reward Todd carrot sticks for good behavior, bam, unprovoked attack, no carrot sticks. And Poke Therapy, do you like Xinyu Wang versus Baptiste? I thought it was priced correctly, so no bet for me. No more tennis. Everything started, but just to recap, the five that have resulted already, 4-1. There they are on the screen right now. Thiago Agustin Tirante beat Alejandro Davidovich Fokina as a -140 favorite. Tamara Korpach won one as a -106 slight favorite over Wang Xinyu. Victoria Golubic -112 versus Alicia Parks was a winner, as was Nuno Borges +147 versus Miromir Kecmanovic. We did have a loser on Daria Snigur. She was a +183 dog versus Peyton Stearns. The five that are pending right now, and again, VSiN subscribers got this at VSiN.com/picks. Dino Prismic up a set on Zhao Fonseca. Nishesh Basavareddy is down two sets, but he's up a break in the third set, so he's trying to fight against Alex Mickelson as a +166 dog. Quentin Alice is up two sets to love on Hugo Humbert, so that one's looking great. And then the ladies' matches, I haven't even checked in on these two. The Sierra match, Sierra +154 versus Paolini, that's on serve in the first. Jill Teichman down a break in the first. So those are pending again. VSiN.com/picks pays to be your survivor. Usually the prices are way better the night before, but there you go. 4-1, we'll see where the day ends. Hopefully it ends up being a very solid day with 10 picks. Iga to win the French. I got preflop at +275. Man, that looks great now. Looks a hell of a lot better today than it did yesterday with Ostapenko and Rybakina both going down. Ostapenko in her quarter, Rybakina in her half. Yannick Sinner to win the French Open, -120. Even though you see that, by the way, straight set win for him, but like he couldn't get out of there without calling for a physio.
Really?
At the end of the third set, I'm like, oh, God, come on, man.
Oh, great.
Because it's just,
I did not catch
it's up. Ridiculously hot. French Open, Francisco Cerundolo to win Q2 at +650. And the Spurs to win the NBA Finals at 19-1. They got to win two in a row, though, here at Game 6 and 7, though, of course, to keep that dream alive. And one other thing in tennis, Djokovic was easy peasy, won the first two sets here against Valentin Royer, had a match point in the third set tiebreaker. He gacked it, and he lost the set. We're on the fourth set here. So if nothing else, it's annoying the hell out of Djokovic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it together, Novak. Who's going for the camo look today? He's going like orange with the clay.
I think you got a yellow and a coral is his outfit, I believe. Is that what you would call that?
Oh, I think that. I could go with yellow up top. That ain't coral on the bottom. That's like orange-red.
I think you might be colorblind.
Maybe. Yeah. That's also possibly true. Mm-hmm. By the way, I forgot to bring this up like an hour ago, and he didn't answer it. So I'm just going to tee it up like the insert insurance company sponsor here. Trivia question from the Bear.
Okay.
Who was the last team, NHL team, to win fewer than half its regular season games and win the Stanley Cup?
Oh, man. That's a great question.
It's a great question. I did see a tweet earlier about the last team with that same set of circumstances to make the Cup final was the 2002 Hurricanes, but they did not win it this year. That year. I do not know who's the last team to win.
What's the answer?
I don't have an answer for you.
Oh.
I don't know if Alika was waiting for us to read it.
How are you going to give a trivia question and not give the answer?
I thought it was a good question. Maybe you do.
No, I don't know. I don't know offhand.
Great also, question, I just though. Had like flashbacks of Bear trivia questions, so I really wanted to bring it up.
What do you got? Oh, you got a little parlay going.
That's
here.
Right. I got a parlay which will be closed tomorrow, one way or the other. Zverev home, Kostyuk home, right, Gil? She won, right? Kostyuk?
Kostyuk is home.
So Potapova tomorrow.
Yes.
To close this out. And then I've got NBA draft bets. Darren Peterson, first overall pick, +350. And Cameron Boza, third overall, -125. Golf again real quick. Outrights this week on Justin Thomas, Rick Fowler, J.J. Spahn, Alex Smalley. Top 20s on Rick, Alex Smalley, Matt McCarty, Christian Bezuidenhout, Ludvig Åberg, your top Nordic player. And one tournament matchup in right now, Tom Hoge over Mackenzie Hughes. Catch all of my bets, breakdown, and all of Matt and Wes's on the Long Shots podcast right now.
Okay. All right. By the way, you still need Sasha Zverev to win his match too, right?
No, he's that was from yesterday.
Bonzi?
Yeah.
The first round? Oh, the first round match. Okay. Jensen Lewis was on earlier. Now, Jensen has a ticket on the Florida Gators to win the College Baseball World Series at 45-1, but he loves it still at 19-1. Loves it still at 19-1. By the way, Matt Grissom from College Baseball Insiders will be on the show tomorrow to break down the brackets, bracket by bracket. Though Jensen did concede, I asked Jensen after the break, after he was on, because we couldn't get through all the brackets, but I asked him, I go, if what is the longest shot of the remaining teams in the regionals, all the teams in the regional, what's the longest shot that you think could make noise? And he did say Jacksonville State, which I've heard from more than one source. If Jacksonville State advances and Florida advance, they would meet in the super regionals. So
Jacksonville State from the state of
Mississippi,
Alabama,
Alabama.
I think it's Alabama. Pretty sure.
There's a Jackson State. There's a Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
Will Hill, Reds today at the Mets. Reds minus 105 at the Mets. He's on the Red Legs. Yankees, he's on his Yankees, minus 150 at the Royals. Shop around. You might be able to get a few pennies better than that today at Kansas City. And he does like the Yankees to win the AL East as well, by the way, at minus 160. And then a F3 under, first three innings under 2.5. Got to lay a little on that, minus 125, but he's going Marlins Blue Jays, F3 under 2.5 runs.
And just overall a great guy, despite us only having him on for one segment today.
He's a little backtracking. I understand what you're doing. Well, you gotta save.
I will not apologize for this at all. I went to Will like a month ago. I was like, hey, do you want to start doing two segments regularly? Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, whatever you need, man. I was like, okay.
And you said today you needed one.
Today I needed one from him, yeah.
Todd Wishnev, before firing shots at other guests, did give us a Gavin Williams play in the Cleveland game today. Guardians, big favorites. He's got Gavin Williams over 6.5 strikeouts at minus 113. And then Nick Whalen joined us moments ago to give some NBA thoughts. And he's got, he had a couple props. He's got
Stephon
Castle over 6.5 assists. Wembanyama over 27.5 points. Are those not official, Nick Whalen?
I don't think he bet him yet. He's looking at those early.
Okay, well, official.
I will probably be with him, though, on a super square Wemby parlay tomorrow.
These are official from Jonathan Davis on the Hurricanes Canadians. Game 4 tonight, the Bell Center in Montreal, Quebec. First period, both teams have scored plus 196. First period, over 1.5 goals, minus 105. Carolina to score the first goal. First period, plus 115. Canadiens to score first period goal, minus 128. Remembering that Carolina to score the first goal, it has to happen in the first period at plus 115. Canadiens to score a first period goal, minus 128. Goal scored first 5 minutes of the first period, plus 192. Goal scored the first 10 minutes of the first period, minus 136. And Hudson 3+ block shots.
Well, he's going to be a very happy or a very angry guy after the first period.
That's exactly right. As the Hurricanes look to go 11-1 to start the playoffs and try to take a 3-1 lead over the Canadiens. Canadiens trying to knot it up at 2 games apiece. And then they can sort of resume the, hey, no Canadian team has won a Stanley Cup since 1993, and that was us. Why not us again? Talk. If they can knot it up at 2 apiece. But if it's 3-1, then, you know, it becomes dicey, obviously. So there you go. By the way, here's the schedule. Now, we never talk about the schedule. Prop Points follows us with Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson. They do that for an hour. Then it's Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni and Jonathan Vonto. Is Jonathan Vontobel okay? He's all right. I think he quit in the basketball challenge.
I think he's on vacation. A little vacation time for him this week.
Oh, so he's off this week. Okay. And then Follow the Money with Mitch and Paul from 4-7 Eastern, 1-4 Pacific. Tomorrow on the show.
A lot of fill-ins this week. Mitch and Paul back tomorrow.
Back tomorrow.
I believe that is Dustin and John Jastrzemski still today.
Okay.
Money Moves, Stormy and TBD, find out.
I know it's Stormy because I've seen
Stormy. Can't remember if Matt's doing today or not. He did the last 2 days.
Okay. Tomorrow on the show, Zach and Crack, Zach Cohen with his NBA thoughts for Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals. And he will have, no doubt, French Open plays.
That was my forehand. Backhand.
That backhand did not look good.
That didn't look good.
And then Crack, Unscripted with Crackman, Bill Krakenberger. Already mentioned Matt Grissom will be on the show tomorrow. College Baseball Insiders. We will go bracket by bracket. The regionals with Matt.
Yeah. To get into it.
Get his thoughts. Do you have any college baseball
bets? I was just going to ask you. Do you? I do not have any.
I have, I, I have thought about it. I still have not made any
bets. I got this Missoula money burning a hole in my pocket. I got to reinvest that somewhere, yo.
What were your odds on Missoula, by the way?
Like plus 350. Are you kidding me? No. It was a, I won back a slice of what I lost on Con Knipple.
Okay. A slice.
Yeah.
That sucked. Kelly's getting very angry again.
That sucked.
It really was. What's worse, that Wembanyama didn't win Defensive Player of the Year last year or Knipple not winning Rookie of the Year this year?
Knipple not winning this year because rules kept Wemby out.
Okay.
Right?
Did they? Yeah. Well, Knipple this year was an atrocity. I agree with you there. Prop points next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.